Hi, y'all. I'm Lisa, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Lisa.
And I'm really grateful to be clean today and, a little bit nervous to be standing here. I'll just put that out at front. I had to write down, the topic of this meeting so I didn't forget it standing up here. And, it's change you must or die you will. And I know that to be true. So, I just got back from this amazing trip 3 days ago to the Galapagos Islands. And I didn't know about much what happened there, and I've learned about it, over the last few weeks. But Darwin discovered the theory of evolution, and he talks about that it's not the most intelligent that survive. It's not the strongest that survive. It's those that are most adaptable. Change, And so I got this T-shirt that says evolve
or become extinct.
And it just seemed like there was a profound, meaning with that. And, I believe that to be true. When I first started using, I was willing to do a lot of changes. I grew up in a family, a good family, and my parents are still together after 50-some years, and I was raised with, really good standards, beliefs, love, all of that. And, there was something inside of me that just didn't feel okay. And, I was willing to do whatever it took to change, to feel okay on the inside, whether that was, the first time, even though, I was raised for years about not doing drugs, and there wasn't drugs in my family, and nobody drank, and nobody cussed, and, all of that. And, little by little, I was willing, just those changes that you don't really notice, from deciding I'm going to smoke pot because I want to feel like I belonged in this new place that I just moved to, my, seventh school in 8 years, what would be the beginning of that, and, to those insidious changes to, way down the line where I made the decision to move out of my family's home. It was a nice home in Bethesda, Maryland. My father was a high-ranking military officer. In fact, his job was keeping drugs out of the country. God bless him, I just kept thinking, shit, I'm going to be on the front of Washington Post. Admiral blah, 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 tries to keep drugs out of the country. Can't keep him out of his house. I made the decision to move out of that house into a 78 Toyota. My dad said, Lisa, either you stop doing what you're doing or you have to leave our home. And with everything I knew, all the strength and intelligence I had, the very best decision and the right one I believed at that time was to move into a 78 Toyota. And you couldn't have told me otherwise. And today it sounds insane. It sounds crazy. Did I mention my dad had drivers and cooks and stewards that cooked and cleaned, and I'm moving into my 78 Toyota thinking, I'll show them. You can't tell me how to live. I didn't know anything about living, I was on that survival mode. I was thinking about, what are those watershed events in my recovery that, making those changes to live rather than to die. And I remember one of the very first ones, after I, agreed to go to treatment, I was in this detox, and it was called social model detox, and I don't know if any of y'all remember that, but it was a government you know, run detox. I was, you know, I had to be reminded that I did not live in that home where my parents lived. You know, I was a dope fiend from the street. I lived in a 78 Toyota. You know, I was no different than those people in that detox that at first I looked at and said, oh, I don't belong here. You know, the silverware doesn't match. You know, the couches the Salvation Army wouldn't take. And what happened for me there, though, was I figured out, you know, I'm just like y'all. You know, in a day at a time, I don't have to die a day at a time. You know, that I can live a day at a time. And I got that message when they brought a meeting in from Narcotics Anonymous. I remember in that detox, it was a couple of days before I was getting out, and I didn't know whether I was going to be accepted to go on to treatment or not. My first time ever, you know, being introduced to recovery. So I didn't really know what the game was. You know, I was just there and had no place else to go. And one of the girls there in the detox said, you know, when I get out of here, you know, I got a connection. You know, and we can, you know, and the crack is unending and the pipes are pretty and all of this shit. And I remember thinking, yeah. You know, because that's how I always thought. You know, I was always looking for the one that had it to find ways and means to get more. You know, I didn't know how to think or act otherwise. You know, but there was a moment of clarity that said, that's just going to be more of what you had. More of what you had, you know. And something helped me make that decision, you know, instead of following her out the door, to say yes when it was offered to me, you know, another 28 days of treatment. And, you know, that was, you know, accepting life, you know, over death. And that little bit of change. And, you know, I've been thinking about other events. And I remember I had about 90 days clean. And a big part of me, like, was in this new life, but uncomfortable. You know, it didn't fit. It, you know, where's the fun? Where's the excitement? You know, where's the good times? And I was hanging out with this guy, actually, who I had used with before, who was, well, he knew I needed to be clean, all right? And so he was going to meetings with me. And I didn't know he was using. But he was going to meetings with me, and I was talking about, you know, I remember it used to be fun going out in the bar and, you know, shooting the little pool and, you know, wearing the little skirt and leaning over the pool table and, you know, getting the attention. Where's the attention? Where's the excitement? You know, and he said, fine, okay, I'll take you out, you know, and we, it was my 90 days clean, and I went out to this pool hall with him, and I remember sitting there ordering my little Coke, you know, sitting at the bar table, sitting at the pool table, you know, shooting pool, trying to be okay with leaning over the pool table, seeing who's looking, you know, that whole thing. And that didn't feel comfortable either. You know, that felt uncomfortable. And as we were leaving the bar, he said, hold on. It was right at this threshold between the outside and the bar room, and he handed me my 90-day chip. And there just something hit me with that. There's something wrong with this. You know, I shouldn't be on the threshold of a bar with 90 days clean. And, you know, at that moment, you know, that little bit of change. You know, I don't belong here. You know, this isn't who I want to be. You know, I don't want to get the attention for what's hanging out over a pool table. You know, there's more to me than that. I didn't know what, but I thought maybe there was. Come to find out there is. And, yeah. And another event I was thinking about, and this was when I was, I want to think it was less than a year clean, but I know it was more than two. You know, I was in a CVS, and I was doing my usual thing where I would take the mascara and put it in my pocket, you know, and whatever other makeup that I thought was overpriced, I shouldn't have to buy. I don't know what the justification was, but it's what I did, you know? One more time, it's just my modus operandi. And at that moment, I thought, I could go to jail clean. You know, it took me 2+ years to figure that out. You know, I was busy thinking about other things. I don't know what, but, you know, I had a moment of clarity there. And, you know, and I talked to my sponsor about it. And that was a big deal, too, because I don't know about anybody else, but I get caught up in what you think about me. You know, I had the image of the perfect recovering addict. I hung with girls. You know, we went to meetings. I went from 9 to 10 meetings a week. I mean, I was, you know, had a sponsor, was sponsoring people at that time, you know, and I didn't want to tell my sponsor that I was stealing it 2+ years clean. A couple of things happened for me with that. You know, I told her about me and she loved me anyway. You know, yeah, you know, that lie is dead, that if you really know me, you won't love me. You know, and that's one of the lies, you know, I don't know about you, but that's the lie I tell myself. You know, she told me little things like, you know, if you can't go in there without stealing, and then don't go in alone. You know, so there was a long time that I went into drugstores accompanied, you know, with adult supervision. You know, y'all doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, that saying that you know, God's going to make up the difference between what I have and what I need. Every time, you know, and if it's even just walking into a CVS, you know, I can take somebody with me. And then, you know, after a while, I knew I had somebody with me. It was called my higher power. And I'd think about it and I wouldn't have to act on it, you know, that kind of stuff. And then I was thinking about, you know, another one of these, you know, change you must or die you will things. That I was in New York and I had about 10 years clean and I was going off to school. You know, one of the things that recovery has afforded me is, you know, when I first got here, they told me that I probably ought not continue to 10 bar. That for me, that probably wasn't a good thing. And they were right about that. You know, they were right about that. And you know, what happened was, you know, I asked for some help, and I went to school, and I asked for some help, and I got scholarships through school, and, you know, I completed one degree, and I thought, you know, like a good addict, I don't think this is going to be enough. My drug of choice was always more. So, you know, I went back to school again, and I ended up in a school in Long Island, and it doesn't really matter where it was, but, you know, I was there for about 3 months, and school was intense. I was at one point taking 30 credits in a semester, and you know, I was trying to you know, get to meetings on a regular basis, and I was bringing my little 3x5 card studying during the meeting, but I was in the meeting, you know. And you know, one day I looked up after being there about 3 months, and I realized there had not been a single woman who had walked up to me and said, "Welcome. Who are you? My name is," you know, and, you know, I was already stressed out. So once I figured that out, and I was sitting in a meeting when I figured it out, and I thought, well, I need to tell these people about themselves, you know, and I got up in the meeting, and I said, you know, I have been here for 3 months, and not one of you women have walked up to me and said anything. I said, if I'd have got clean, y'all would have let me die, you know. And I felt good about telling them about themselves, you know. Yes. And I sat down and I called my sponsor and I told her how I told them. And she said, "Lisa, you know, after 10 years clean, you're still looking for what people can do for you? You know, what have you been doing for 10 years? I thought, damn, I thought this one was justified, you know. And so what happened for me is there was that little subtle change in my thinking. And I started looking, you know, for us. And I found her. You know, she had blonde, scraggly hair and her makeup. She had cried down to, you know, her cheekbones, and she was shaking in the meetings. And I said, that's who I need to reach out to, you know, and she was my project. You know, I picked her up for meetings. We sat in meetings together. I took her out to eat. And you know what? I got everything I needed, you know, because it talks about in our literature that we can only keep what we have by giving it away, you know. So that, again, was just a moment where, you know, that's what kept me clean, by reaching out, you know, to the newcomer, and you know, not being so selfish about where's mine and what are you going to do for me, and you know, all of that kind of stuff. You know, I'm responsible for my recovery, and I can only keep what I have by giving it away. And how much, you know, more joy that gave me than telling all of them off in those meetings. And I guess. The last thing that I've been thinking about most recently about changing, because it's about continuing to change. You know, what worked for me, you know, at 90 days clean and 2 years clean, at 10 years clean. You know, I celebrated 20 years this year, and which was a miracle, and you know, that 20th year was probably one of the hardest years of my life. You know, I found myself in a situation where, you know, the person who loved me most, I was treating most poorly. And I didn't, you know, I didn't realize it, you know. I got to a point where I, you know, I was justified. I can act any which way I want to act, you know, and I can if I'm willing to pay the consequences, you know. And what happened for me is that I was allowed to take a look at myself and say, I don't want to act like this anymore. I want to be different. You know, I want to change. I want to be the one who builds you up, not telling you how you should have done it, or how you ought to do it next time, or you did that again. You know, that's who I became, you know. And the deal is that in this program, the gentleness, you know, that we are allowed to, like, see what we're doing and decide we can do something different. And it's only through the help of, again, getting honest with the people who love me, asking for help from my sponsor, you know, going back to my parents who had taught me those standards, beliefs, morals, and, you know, my dad saying to me, Lisa, you can change. Look at all the change you've done so far. You've been clean for 20 years. You know, you can do this too. And, you know, I'm just so grateful that, you know, there isn't a point where, you know, you've changed all you can change, and you just have to suffer the consequences of where you are. You know, that we can continue to say, I can get better. I want to get better. And that I have people in my life that love me enough to say, it's time to get better. It's time to get better. So, you know, I'm certainly not the strongest. I'm certainly not the smartest. You know, but I am willing to change, you know, a day at a time, because without recovery, you know, I'm extinct. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Our next speaker is Spanky D from West Palm Beach.
Thank you. Whoa. I'm going to have to call Spanky.
Hey, Spanky.
First of all, I got to say, it's truly by God's grace and His mercy that I'm alive. You know, the theme of this convention, more living than surviving. Whoa, I was sitting here, and I wanted to get up and go tell the guys in the, on the hood squad, put some chains on the doors, because there's too many folks coming up in here. My God. I don't even know where to start. You know, I got to say, this is one special convention for me. And the reason why it's so special, this is my first convention when I first got clean. I came up with a guy that brought me up in, from the peninsula area down in Virginia, Hampton, Virginia. And him and I, he brought me up this time, too. I flew up from Florida, and I flew to Newport News, and I said, well, we're going to hit the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, and we there. And the first time he brought me here, I had no money. I had to go get the energy package, and you guys put me up in the Castle of the Sands, free of charge, and told me, we love you, and keep coming back. Today, 60 days from having 17 years clean. And you're talking about an awesome, beyond my wildest dreams, life that I'm living today. I could have never done it without the God of my understanding, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And see, and we're talking about that change, that inner spirit, that spiritual change. And you change, I don't mean with no 1, 2, 3 step slide. I'm talking 12 steps. If you want the change, then you need to invest in the 12 steps. And I don't mean get to the 12 step and say, well, I'm done. I'm here. You start all over again. See, when the programming committee they called me to ask me to do a speaking engagement, I was honored, I was floored. And when I sent in my pre-registration, I donated to the newcomer. So newcomer, I got to address you. If you're here, and I think the first Chesapeake-Potomac region NA that I came to, a convention that I came to was Shelter the Storm. And my God, it was raining, it was cold, and I said, well, this weekend God is going to do something different, and he has, except for this morning, you know. But man, it's a pleasure being here. You know, I'm one of them basic text buff, I got to tell y'all, because this is my life. This is what has changed my life. And if you ever look at it, I still today have my first NA meeting with all of my numbers, and a lot of these people are not here today. And if you open it up and it's falling apart, it's got duct tape, it's got staples, it's got, but I still care. And I mean, I've had plenty of sponsees and plenty of people in my life say, I need a basic text. I'll go buy them one, I won't give them this one. This is my life. You know, to start off though, you know, we talk about the 12 steps and how we can buy and invest in change. You know, but I've done a lot of service work right here, and I might as well tell you guys, you know, I do have one resentment with Narcotics Anonymous, but it's a joke, so don't nobody take it serious. I done been the chair of this, the chair of the convention down in Palm Beach. I done been the H&I chair for the region down in South Florida. I done a lot of service work. But for the life of me, I can't figure out why none of y'all would let me be the treasurer of anything. So I'm saying to myself, is I done shared too much of my history with you guys or what? But it's beautiful. This is a beautiful life. You know, but my favorites are the traditions. Tradition 5, 3, and 5. But tradition 5 says, what is our message? The message is that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. Our message is hope, and the promise is freedom. When it's all said and done, our primary purpose only to carry the message to the addict that still suffers, because that's all we have to give. Man, this is a beautiful thing. See, I got here in Narcotics Anonymous, and I was in a meeting just a few days ago. And the guy said, yeah, and Spanky, and this one, and that one. They coming in, they getting up, they sharing, you know, all of this old, this good sharing stuff. Even to the day, I try not to curse. But I need to let you know, I come in here straight out of the penitentiary. Three times. I can still remember my penitentiary number. 42712. I've been to jail over hundreds of times. I done OD'd 5 times. And God has still gave me a life worth living. See, it's a purpose for me being here today. And at this convention, I've done plenty of speaking engagements. I was telling Lisa, I was sitting over there, man, I was trying to say, well, I don't know, I got to go to the bathroom, I want to ask y'all to let me take a break. I'm standing up here with my leg crossed. You know, I was telling Lisa, I say, man, my heart is about to jump out my chest. And she said, well, you know, I was always told, that's when God is getting ready to shake the truth out your hind parts. And he's doing a pretty good job about right now. So, getting here, I had some resentments. My baby sister, I got to tell y'all, I had 5 sisters and I was the only boy. So I was already feeling like I was different. Everybody in the house went to the bathroom and they squatted. But they told me when I went to the bathroom, you got to stand. So I couldn't figure that out for years. So I was already feeling indifferent. My baby sister called the popo on me and told me he over there on that corner, he got on that baseball cap and he got on that yellow shirt or whatever in them jeans. And he got a pocket full of dope. See, I had 2 sisters, 3 sisters that's deceased. One from the virus, one was a murder victim, and the other one was an OD victim. So my baby sister called the popo on me, turned me in. Them folks come at me like I was, you know, the American gangster dudes or something, man. And I want them, but a junkie. And I got to tell you guys, the word addict, I had to go to the Webster to find out, well, what is, in this book, to find out, well, what is an addict? Because I thought I was one of them gut level, them bolotum junkies. See, and I got to tell you, and I hope this don't set off any alarms on anybody. I was one of them them IV drug users that shot dope in the neck. I ain't had no more veins. And if you ever get close up on me, you'll see tracks on both sides of my neck. See, I done burnt up the groin, the armpits. And then when I come in here and you guys talking about, man, I lost a house. I done smoked up my job. I say, well, y'all ain't been to hell yet. You need to lose about 5 houses and about 25 jobs and lose all your worthy self-esteem, self-worth, and then come back, talk to me. See, I came in here doing the duck walk. You know what the duck walk is, when you're in them shackles. See, because when I come out the federal penitentiary, they told me, you got a contract to sign with us. You got to go to a long-term treatment. And you can't divert from it. Do we going to give you these 20 years back? And I had 20 years hanging on the gate. And I got to tell you, I worked for the federal government at that time. And so after about 10 years or 12 years with the federal government, I got knocked off. My sister called. And I was going to work, man. I had one of them good, high-power federal jobs. I used to wear a shirt and tie. I used to put my shirts in the laundry and get them starched. And a shirt and tie and go to work and blood dripping all on my collar. And I think I'm looking good. You know, I'm fine. I'm just okay. To come to find out that everybody knew what I was doing and recognized what I was doing except for me. So after coming in here, and I got to say, I've only had one white chip, and I only had two sponsors. And the only reason I've had two sponsors because when I moved to South Florida, my sponsor, who was still living there, and say, well, you got to find you a sponsor there. You got to have someone close in your network to work with you there. And that's what I did. But since that time, that gentleman that was sponsoring me up here has deceased. And I can tell you, he breathed, ate, lived recovery. And I'm so grateful for him. He would carry me through the 12 steps, then he would carry us through the 12th edition. He would carry me through the 12 steps, then every other step we would do a tradition. And still to the day, when I'm up in this area, I go over to Quantico, to the military graveyard, and give him my blessings and my thanks. You know, but it was very hard. It was very humbling coming into the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous with an ego as big as this room. And you guys deflated that ego, but you helped build the man. And I'm not the same individual that came in here almost 17 years ago. I made some significant changes in my life. You know, just like this, the topic of this workshop, change you must or die you will. And it's not talking about physical death. So let's not get it twisted. It's talking about that spiritual, mental, emotional death. See, and they told me this was because I had a big thing with God when I first got here. Because we had to go to church every Sunday to Sunday school to get a quarter, I think it was a quarter, to go to the movie. But we had to go to Sunday school every Sunday and sit in church in order to get money to go to the movie at Sunday evening. So me and my boys, my little crew, we used to sit in the back of the church. So when they passed the basket for a collection, we used to take the money about the basket. So I was addicted to a lifestyle long before I was addicted to a substance. So getting into the steps had allowed me, and especially, you know, when I first got here and they was talking about, yeah, that fourth step, that make people go back out. That fourth step, that's dangerous. That's the danger zone. Man, when I worked that fourth step, I put in there, and I got to tell y'all, when I was in the penitentiary, and hopefully this don't upset nobody, I didn't mess with none of the, you know, the boys, as we called them. But when I got back on the street, I used to tell folks I was confused because I didn't know whether I was bisexual, trisexual, homosexual, because I did whoever I had to do to get whatever I had to get. See, and for a long time, that was going to graveyard with me. See, I knew I couldn't share that in an open forum. But my sponsor told me then, if you want to come clean, you got to get honest with yourself and honest with this disease. And you got to, God already know. So you got to tell another human being, talking about that fifth step. And so when I shared it, man, it was like, wow. Empire State Building come up off my shoulders. Because I carried that for a long, long time, along with some other things that was revealed to me in the process of working steps, was I had a lot of resentments with authority figures. I had a lot of resentments with school teachers. I was an all-American high school basketball player, won the Virginia State Championship 2 years in a row, a high school All-American football player. And when I went there, I had all kind of scholarships, you know, the Howard and Georgetown, I mean, all kind of scholarships. And I went and took the SAT test. Them folks said, this boy ain't stupid, he's illiterate. I say, what? Because they passed me all the way through school because I could play ball. And when I looked at it, I'm saying, now here I am, 18, 19 years old, and these folks done passed me all the way, and I thought I was smart. My reading level was on a fifth grade reading level. And I'm graduating from high school with all A's. I ain't went to nail class, though. You know, I knew I was the teacher. So that, I got to see what part I played in. I ain't went to nail class. I knew I was going to get the grade because I could play ball. They weren't going to kick me off the team. They weren't going to win no more championships. So that was a safety net for me. And as I'm writing and living, and I got to say, it's more important to implement and apply these steps in your life than it is writing. You can go to all the meetings you want to go to. You can go to do all the service work you want to do. But, you know, it's just like if I take this trash can over there and put some pretty Christmas paper on it and some bows on it, it's still a effing trash can. See, I caught myself then. See, y'all got to know I'm a work in progress. I'm still working on some stuff. I ain't arrived. I'm not, you know, there yet. So I knew, and what was shared with me, you got to clean up the inside before you can clean up the outside. And once I started doing some serious step work and started working with some sponsees and really started, I just don't have my sponsees. I'm not one of them guys that say, oh, well, if you work in the first step, I'm working the first step. If you work in a four-step, I'm working in four-step. See, I got a sponsor I know that's working steps. He's got a sponsor that he worked with that I know is working steps. And he got a sponsor that I know are working steps. I'm almost 17 years clean. I'm sponsoring a couple of guys got 22 and 24 years clean. And so my question was, why you want me to sponsor you? You know, you got more clean time. It's not about the quantity. It's about the quality. You know, and sometimes you got to be very mindful, because I tell the guys that I sponsor, I say, this is nothing but namesake. I got to agree to sponsor you if you agree to sponsoring me. And that's the way we work. You know, and so when I got to Florida, you know, after all of this mess in my life, and I got to say, you know, when I first came in here, I didn't come in here to get clean and to stay clean. I came in here to get them federal probations and them federal judges out my back pocket. And that's just being honest. And I came in and they gave me a service commitment. They gave me the key. And they didn't, and I didn't know what they was doing, but that was God working through them to get to me. Gave me the key to the church. Told me, you got to make the coffee. You got to set up the meeting. And then we moved. And they still told me, you got to make the coffee, set up the meeting. And back then, they were smoking in the meeting. You got to set out the ashtrays. And when the meeting is over with, you got to clean up the ashtrays. You got to clean up the kitchen. You got to clean up the coffee pot and put the chairs up. And right today, that's a couple of weeks ago, a young kid in our home group, I'm over there making coffee, scrambling, and he come up to me and say, Spanky, you still making coffee with all that clean time you got? I say, well, you probably need to start making some coffee too if you want to stick around here for a while, for a minute. And so I still do a lot of service on a lot of different levels. And that's what keeps me here and it keeps me coming back. You know, when I moved to Florida, before I moved to Florida, I got to back up just a little bit. I went into treatment at the VA hospital because I ain't had no insurance. You know, I was one of them guys when I couldn't get to college on my scholarships. I went to a junior college. And I ain't do nothing then but run little skirts and got high. So back, you know, I'll be 59 in a few more days also. So I was caught up in that Vietnam draft era. And so I'm a veteran. So so we went down and the folks say, well, you got three choices for duty. Say you can go to Vietnam, you can go to Germany, or you can go to Korea. Y'all know what my dumb high pa said? Send me to Vietnam. It's just like the basic text say, going to ask for a heart attack or ask to commit suicide. Because when them folks say, well, why you want to go to Vietnam? I said, man, this is back going back to that era. I said, man, I heard they got dope over there that knocked elephants out. I said, why shouldn't I want to go to Vietnam? People say, well, yeah, you is illiterate. Don't nobody want to volunteer to go to Vietnam. I said, well, that was my disease talking to me. You know, I want to go where the best dope was. Because, see, and I got to say, when I started getting high, man, dope was cheap. $2-3. By the time I quit getting high, dope was about $20. And then them youngsters ran me up in here too, because they were selling dope and they were saying, I ain't taking no change today. Get in line. See, I started out selling dope and thought I was all that. But at the end, I was the one trying to run to the corner liquor store, trying to take the change and get it in the paper money so I could scope. Man, that was, you know, the basic text say, and more to be revealed, which is one of my favorite chapters. In recovery, our ideal of fun change. We are now free to enjoy the simple things in life, like fellowship and living in harmony with nature. We now have become free to develop a new understanding of life. As we look back, we are grateful for our new life. It is unlike the events that brought us here. While using, we thought that we had fun and non-users was deprived of it. Spirituality enables us to live a life to its fullest, feeling grateful for who we are and for what we have done in life. Since the beginning of our recovery, we have found that joy does not come from material things, but from within ourselves. We find that when we lose the self-obsession, we are able to understand what it means to be happy, joyous, and free. Indescribable joy comes from sharing from the heart. We no longer need to lie to gain acceptance. This is my favorite part. Narcotics Anonymous offers addicts a program of recovery that is more than just a life without drugs. Not only is this life better than the hell we lived, it is better than any life we have ever known. We have found a way out, and we see it works for others. Each day, more to be revealed. You know, I told y'all I come out of the federal penitentiary, and I think I had caught, start catching my felonies back in 1984. I think it was Barry Goldwater and Johnson running from president. I wasn't even able to vote no more. I went and went in this program, and it was like rehabilitation for felonies and drug addicts at the VA hospital. And I was doing so well. You know, we some smart, you know, addicts are smart folks. So they wanted to use me as a guinea pig. You know, a lot of guys that was in this program was walking around picking up the trash and picking up the cigarette butts on the grounds. They say, well, we want to put somebody over there in medical service, MAS, Medical Administration Service. You know, we need somebody over there to deliver the mail and to, you know, to interact, to be the liaison between the different services. Next thing I know, the girls, you know, because they always say, you know, us government workers, we some lazy dudes, right? So the girls say, well, how about getting over there and getting Mr. calls? It wasn't everything, it wasn't computerized, but, you know, we check them in, check them out, and read the, I was reading doctors' notes, man, and look, you know, that Chinese stuff, and I was figuring out they want a CAT scan with contrast and you know, this blood work done and that blood work done. And I'm over there on the computer like I'm, you know, my ego done took shot. Like I'm a VA worker. I'm just a damn volunteer, right? Right? In a program. But you would have never known it, right? And so my supervisor came to me one day and she said, well, I can say it. This is me. I can break my own anonymity. She said, well, Mr. DeLoach, aren't you a veteran? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, didn't you work for the government before? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, look, we got this position coming open, and I would like for you to apply for it. I say, ma'am, I'm a 3-time convicted felon. I came in this program out of the federal penitentiary. You guys ain't gonna give me no job. But to share that, you know, and I had a lot, in the beginning, I used to not want to share because I didn't want to feel like I was boasting or bragging. But one of my sponsees at the time said, well, we need to hear that. So she came back. And she said, well, look, I'm going to help you do your KSAOs and, you know, the questions and fill out the application and all that. And she helped me. And she said, we're going to send this to Philly to, you know, Operation Personnel Management, OPM. And, you know, we're going to see how this work out for you. So them folks called me back about 2 weeks, 3 weeks later. Say, well, Mr. DeLoach, you got a lot of breaks in your employment record. Where was you at in 1977? I say, penitentiary. She said, well, where was you at in 1982? Jail. Well, where was you at in 1984? Penitentiary. She said, okay, we'll get back with you. Man, I was going in my home group at that time. I was going down and a Sunday morning meeting, man, I was crying. These people jerking my train, giving me all this false hope, like they're going to do something for me and give me my job back. And I don't even know why they're doing this to me. You know, just let me go on, because once I get out of treatment, I'm going to go on back out on the street and I'm going to do what I know what to do anyway. I don't want no job no way. I'm about $35,000 in the arrears and child support. They got a lot of responsibility come with a job. I'm going to duck all that stuff. You know, I'm just let me go. They called me back about 3 weeks later, say, well, we offering you this position. Do you accept it? I say, well, that's God. Some people say, well, how do you get back with the federal government and you share that you've been in federal penitentiary? I say, don't ask me. Ask my God. Because I never thought it would happen for me. And I got to tell you, and that's the most beautiful thing that has happened to me in my recovery. But see, it's some more to go along with that. And real short and sweet. The same job that I started off as a volunteer, the girls thought they were working me because they ain't want to do the work. And I'm learning. And see, one of my strongest character defects is retaining. And I remember stuff like, you know, I had the passwords, and we were breaking all kind of federal laws because they were giving me the password, the access to the computer, because they didn't want to do nothing. I'm going to get some coffee. You know, watch the counter. Okay, I got it. I got it. See, but a lot of times when you got felonies, people don't understand, especially with the government, if you don't get terminated or you don't get fired and you resign, you can always be reinstated to get back with the government. And they gave me my reinstatement back and gave me a nice job. And do you know, 4 years later, where I started that volunteer standing up there with that shirt and tie looking good and smelling good, and I end up being their supervisor. And some of them had some resentments. Some of them, we done taught that man and taught that man and taught that man. See, but you got to stay open-minded right here, you know. And here he is now, our supervisor. So I say, okay. But I got to tell you, too, coming into the program, I didn't come in here, like I said, to get clean and to stay here. I came in here because y'all, and I got to tell, and it's just my story. I'm telling the truth. I got to be honest, because y'all girls used to come up and give me them old big N.A. hugs, and we love you, keep coming back. And I had a coffee commitment, and I used to make the best coffee, and they used to, oh, Spanky, your coffee tastes so good, and they would come over to the coffee pot, 3 or 4 times, because it would be, you know, cold, and so they want some good coffee to drink. And, man, that commitment is what kept me coming back. And I told my sponsor then, I said, man, I love going to these meetings. I said, can we go to 2 meetings a day? He said, well, you don't know I got a family to take care of. I got a job. I said, but yeah, but them girls, they smelling so good. They skin looks so good. And they gave me them hugs, and they say they love me, man. I never had heard that in my family before. And I thought he was going to say, well, you're coming to these meetings for all of the wrong reasons. You can't come back to any more of these meetings. But he told me, he said, you know what? He said, keep making that coffee. Keep looking. Because eventually, one of the two things is going to happen. Either you're going to get this program, or this program is going to get you. And I kept looking. I kept smelling. You know, y'all some good smelling women around here, man, right? And see, and I came in here with some issues, lust issue, sexual issue. I was all confused, man. Because, see, in my neighborhood, when they say, we love you, I wanted to know, well, where we going to hook up, what time we meeting, and what time we going to get it on. And that's the way I was raised, and that was my intelligent level of my mindset. But anyway, real short and sweet, you know, because I know I only got a couple more minutes, I got pissed off at that job one day. I mean, I got on the computer, see, by that time, and y'all know the computers would screw you up, too, you know, especially when you got all kind of records, and, you know, it used to be statewide, but that computer now nationwide, worldwide, so, you know, it can screw you up. So I got on the computer, and I started looking. I said, I'm going to find me another job. I'm leaving here. You know, they ain't going to keep abusing me. They gave me the job. They allowed me to get back. But I said, they ain't going to keep abusing me and using me like a slave right here. I had no gratitude for allowing me to get back in, but they were putting more and more responsibility and more pressure on me, right? So I found this job in West Palm Beach at the VA. Man, I put in my paperwork, and I emailed it. I ain't even faxed it off. I emailed it to the girl, right? And she called and say, well, you know, you still interested in this position? I said, yeah. So she said, well, we're going to do a conference interview with you. You know, my supervisor, me, and the lead person. I said, okay, no problem. She called me about 2 days later, and we did a conference interview, and because I had never been to Florida. And she said, okay, we got a couple more interviewees, and we'll get back with you before the week is out. She called me back the next day and said, are you still interested in this job? She said, because if you is, get you some sunglasses, some shorts, and some sandals, and come on. And I did that. But from there, I was in the process of filing, you know, like I said, filing for my clearance, you know, to get my citizenship right back. And Jeb Bush, at the time, was the governor. He wouldn't have liked it because his brother was running for presidency, and I ain't vote for him. So I don't know how many, I can't bring no politics up in here, but they say, the joint say, "Dear Mr. Spanky DeLoach, the governor with the crew members of the cabinet of the executive order, if we signed this executive order 2004, encloses a certificate granting you your reinstatement of your citizen rights in the state of Florida, except to own possession of a firearm." So y'all know what kind of firearm I got? Because we got a lot of rodents and little, whatever they call them little things down in Florida. Man, I got me a pellet gun. But I got to say, you know, since that time, I bought about 10 years ago, I bought a lot down in Florida. Actually, it's in Port St. Lucie. It's on one of the suburbs, West Palm Beach. And I only tell my neighbors how much I paid for that lot because I'm scared they might burn me out, right? And me and my wife, we had a house built from the ground. I mean, we bought the lot and we had the house built from the ground up. And a lot of my friends would come down and say, "Boy, you living like King Tuck or somebody down here." But you got to remember where I come from. See, I come from the project. I come from a place in my life where we didn't have, my wife say, "Well, you know, we got to find chandeliers for the nook." I say, "Well, what in the H is the nook?" Okay. She said, "You know, that's the little dining area where we sit and drink coffee and eat bagels." I say, "Well, all I'm used to is eating toast and jam." And I mean, it's beyond my wildest dreams, man. We used to, see, we had no chandeliers in the project. And when you flicked on the light, you had to do the shuffle to kill the roaches. And when you went to turn the light on, we didn't have the pull string. We had twisted light bulb. So my life during this process of change and through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, the God of my understanding, and all of you guys, whether you here for the day or you here for 25 years, have allowed me and helped me grow in this process. You know, one day at a time, I can honestly say my life has gotten significantly. And it don't mean I still don't have issues that I got to work on. I just had a great one just the other day. I was telling my man, Pratt, coming up here, I had a flight and I had a layover in Atlanta. And I hate Atlanta, man, going through that airport there. When you get there, ain't no telling when you're going to get out. So they had a 75 flight plane coming this way, and something was wrong with the plane. So we all should have been grateful that they canceled that flight, but they put another one in the place that went down to 50. So that means 25 people was going to get cut. I was the first one out of the 25 to get cut, right? So the lady said, "Y'all go ahead and sit down. We're going to work something out. We're going to get y'all out here today." And I started playing the tape back. And people were standing up there raising all kind of hell. I sat over there, I said, I'm glad I got a program and a God. I sat over there and I just watched them. And I usually would have been the one up there and been back up in handcuffs, calling all kind of MFs and Bs and y'all should have told us. But I sat over there and I was real humble. And they was offering people $200, you know, on the next flight, a coupon or whatever. So a couple of people jumped right on it. So guess who got to be the first one out of the 25 to go get on the flight? That was God working in my life once again. See, because I was humble enough, I was patient enough, I tolerated all of the nonsense, and I sat there real humble, and I was the first one got on that flight, man. And I'm grateful that I'm here alive and clean today. So with that, I know I done ran over a little bit, but, you know, I tell a lot of people, don't put me to the mic and talk about recovery, but I won't never shut up. Thank you, guys. I'm going to call Spanky.